It is Your Money. Welcome, welcome. I'm Susie Jones. Happy to have you with us on this day that we are talking about retirement and what octogenarians want you to know about retirement. Joining us, as always, is the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and financial advisor, Bruce Elmer, and Peg Webb, senior vice president and financial advisors. Welcome to both of you this day. How are you both?
Good morning, Susie. Good morning, Bruce.
Hello, Peg Webb. Hello, Susie Jones. Thank you, Susie, for the introduction. Before we jump into the topic today, I just want to quickly mention, I feel pretty strongly about this. You know, if you're listening to us right now, it's probably Memorial Day or near Memorial Day or Memorial Weekend. And while you're celebrating with loved ones and having a picnic or having a barbecue or whatever you're doing, let's remember why we're doing this. People that gave the military people that gave the ultimate sacrifice, gave up their lives for these freedoms for our country. I always reflect on that this weekend. We always do something. We get together with friends, but I always want to make sure I reflect. And I never served, but I certainly appreciate everybody that did. And obviously, families that had members that passed away, gave the ultimate sacrifice. Thank them if you know somebody like that. Peg, anything else you want to add, or you want to jump into the topic?
Well, I just second everything you said. I do have family members. My dad served. My brothers have served. And for the freedom that we have, I actually have goosebumps right now because we love how the situation is today, and we know that it was a tough road to get here.
Yep. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that really quickly. So Susie mentioned octogenarians, and I don't think any of the three of us qualify yet, although I am closer to 80 than I am to 50 at this point. But the reason we mentioned octogenarians is, like, you know, last week, Peg, we talked about visualization, visualizing your future, visualizing retirement before you get there, and we talked about how people can, are successfully visualize their future lives in retirement, are often better prepared for that retirement. So this week we thought we'd build on what we talked about last week and look to people that have been retired for a while, that are later in retirement, and maybe learn from them. What secrets do they have? What successes can they share? Or what regrets do they have? What do they wish they had done differently if they could turn back the hands of time? And listeners, if you're an octogenarian or close to being an octogenarian, or you've just been retired for many years and you've got, you know, something to share that you did successfully or regret, by all means, chime into the show. We'll get you involved. Susie gives the number a lot, but I'll throw it out there, 651-461-9226. But, Peg, what do we learn from our clients or people we know that are seniors or that are retired? What do we learn from them at retirement that they're telling us, that things they did well, things they're glad they did, or things they wish they had done?
Well, I thank you for handing that over to me, because I feel like you and I, in the position that we have, being a financial advisor, we have decades of time of talking to people. And quite frankly, a lot of the people that come to us are between 40 and 60 years old, and wanting to have help creating a financial plan for them. But, you know, we've done this so long, Bruce, that now we have several 80-plus people, right? Because they have spent 25 or plus years with us. And I always question people when they come in for their reviews, because they're just kind of a wealth of knowledge of something that I can use with the younger 40, 50-year-olds today. So they do have some regrets. They also wish they had known a lot more when they were 40 and 50. And another thing is they always kind of, they sought out for some help. You know, it was kind of new, because when you look at longevity in general, you know, I kind of look back now and think, when we were talking to these 50-year-olds, you know, the stats were, if you were born in 1940, your mortality was at 60 years old as a man and 65 as a woman. So when I looked that up again this morning, I thought, well, no wonder they really couldn't, when you look at the future of decades of time and the stats were 65 on average, here's 80-year-olds, and they're plentiful today, have all sorts of stories that they can share. But at that time, I felt like they didn't really know that, hey, I better start saving earlier than later. They thought they'd be gone at 65. So a lot of them today, though, look back and say, now that I am alive at 80, I waited too long to start saving. And I see that as one component of not knowing how long you're going to live. The other thing that's not on our list, Bruce, but comes up a lot from people I talk to, is increase your financial literacy earlier than later. Learn about personal finance. Seek help from people even when you're younger and you feel like you don't even have any money. The most successful young people and the people that we talk to today, more so in their 50s and 60s, they had someone coaching them about financial literacy. Bruce?
Yeah, you know, Peg, it's interesting. And again, I didn't even know during the week what our topic was this week. I didn't look at it till later in the week. But then when I saw what our topic was, I looked back at my meetings last week because I knew I'd had a couple meetings with octogenarians. So I had three client meetings, review meetings, with longtime clients last week with folks in their 80s. And there's a couple common denominators as I think about those clients. Number one, they're all doing fine. They're not going to run out of money at the review meeting. I always tell them, you know, enjoy life. If you haven't checked everything off your bucket list yet, go do it because you have the economic wherewithal to do it. But the other common denominator is they all seem remarkably youthful. None of them, if you looked at them, you would guess or know that they're in their 80s. They're all extremely healthy and youthful, and they all give me great credit and are very thankful to me, and I have to tell them, you know what, we may have helped a little bit, but you were doing a great job before you ever met us, and you were probably going to be fine anyway, but thank you. I hope we took what was a good situation and made it a little bit better. But then I also had, this wasn't in the last week, but in the last couple of weeks, Peg, I had an intro with a 77-year-old single lady, and you talk about mistakes that they made. She did a great job of saving and investing. She had over $5 million in an individual retirement account, but the mistake that she made was that was virtually all the money she had. Other than a couple thousand dollars in a put-and-take checking account, all her net worth was in that IRA, and what she wanted me to try to help with, she was getting crushed with taxes, and she was wondering, you know, how does she get out of paying all these taxes? And I had to tell her, unfortunately, at age 77, and you're in required minimum distributions, and your RMD alone on a $5 million IRA is going to throw you into a 24% tax bracket. There's probably not much you can do. So her regret was not understanding at a younger age the importance of tax diversification. She did a great job of saving and investing and accumulating money, but she's getting whacked with taxes in retirement at age 77. Peg?
Yeah, I see that often too. But at that point in time, when they, a lot of times it's teachers and government workers, and they were educated to put money in at a very early age. And it was just easy for them to take the money out of their paycheck. And it wasn't until, I'd say a couple decades ago when, you know, Roth IRAs, tax advantage plans came out. But I would agree with you, Bruce, not a lot of people switched to the tax advantage plan because it was, why would I pay Uncle Sam today if I can just make money on my money long-term and wait to pay them? But this is that's a good example. The other one is people today, the bad news is some of the regrets are that they didn't protect their downside. And part of that is not, hey, I'm in the stock market, I shouldn't have been 100% in that. part of it is unexpected health reversal. So we're talking about 80-year-olds between 80 and 90, but what people plan for at 50 isn't always what life plans for them. So one of the things is longevity. So if you thought that you were only going to live till 65, or here are people now that are living to 90, 100. I met a 105-year-old the other day just by happenstance. And they are just, you know, when they talk about their regrets, they just feel like they weren't going to be a lot around this long. So it was hard to focus on compounding, you know, your money or thinking it was going to last when you thought that you were not going to be here. And then it used to be, Bruce, that people would, when they thought about the stock market, they would have somebody that worked for 3M or General Electric or something like that, and they encouraged people to buy that stock. Well, the regrets were that they didn't take that advice, or they took it, but yet it was a very minimal amount that they put into it. And then if they did take them up on it, they concentrated in that one stock and never really diversified. And then the other regret was a loss of business due to markets. So if the market was bad, it was just hard to find the money to keep your business going. You know, the other thing is we hear this a lot where people just say, I've worked too long because I didn't save enough. That's a regret. And now they look at life and wish that they had more time to do the things that they wish they could do when they were healthy. So there's just a point in time when I know, Bruce, you mentioned that the 77-year-old woman was very healthy, but that's not everybody. Some people in their 60s, you know, are getting some type of failure, and they shouldn't, and I coach them, don't wait till your 60s. If there's something on your bucket list and you really want to do it, then I encourage them to do it, because we all of us would love to be 90 years old, but we're not all fortunate enough to get there and to be healthy enough to go on that big trip that maybe you wanted to go on. Bruce?
Yeah, so Peg, gosh, that generated several thoughts. I'm probably not going to remember all of them, but based on what you just said, it occurred to me that I have some people that, like you said, didn't save enough soon enough, and I think that's somewhat of a common theme among retirees that are clients of mine. But I also get people, you know, so I get people that say I worked longer than I wanted to because I had to, but sometimes they worked longer than they wanted to because we talked about this last week, because they never feel like they actually have enough and they're afraid to spend. So I get some of that. And then I get some people that say, I wish I wouldn't have retired as early as I did, because after I retired, a lot of my purpose went away. And we talk to clients all the time about the decision to retire is not just an economic one, but it's also, you know, synergistically, how's your life going to change? What's going to motivate you? What's going to drive you to get up in the morning? What's going to keep you active? What's going to give you a sense of purpose and a sense of identity? And we talk to our clients all the time about that. And some people, unfortunately, didn't think about that before they retired. So I get both. I get people that wish they would have worked longer, or people that wish they would have retired sooner. But another positive common denominator, Peg, tell me, you must have heard this. My retired clients, for a lot of them that have been financially successful, will say something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but they'll say, well, it's simple. Just don't spend more than you earn. And they lament on how young people today, you know, want immediate gratification, and they spend money that they don't have. And these people just said, if I didn't have the money, I couldn't afford it. I didn't buy it till I could. You just don't spend more than you take in. And as simple as that seems, successful people, financially successful people have done that. And a lot of people that struggle don't do that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm kind of envious of the young people today that are traveling around the world, and a lot of them are having their, you know, family later in life. It's just completely different than you and I actually had. But I think with the longevity and people actually able to travel around the world still in their 60s and 70s, it'll be interesting to see their life at 60s and 70s to see what they're doing, if they're just kind of settling down, saying, hey, I've seen the whole world. But the number one kind of underestimated amount of money needed is for healthcare costs.
Yeah.
And so back to the people that we're working with, I mean, there was no way they thought, oh, what do you mean? I thought I was getting healthcare from the government after I was 65, and that was all paid for. Well, that's not true. You know, we're paying all these premiums. We got the B, C, everything with Medicare today. Long-term care insurance, because we're all living longer, there's a lot more failure of health, but you're not dying, right? You have some troubles, but yet you can go in a long-term care facility, but that's expensive. The only people that get that for free are people who didn't save at all. So that is something. And then the premiums just going higher and higher, and healthcare has just gone so high. That's what these 80-year-olds are saying. I never dreamed that this percentage I would be paying for my healthcare.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up healthcare. I was going to, if you didn't beat me to it. And just to add to that, Peg, you know, when we look at inflation for forecasting the future, and we do, we can look at an overall inflation rate and make an assumption, but there are certain things that the cost goes up way faster than the typical rate of inflation, and healthcare has certainly been one of those, and that continues. So, yeah, if we can coach our clients anything, it's to be aware of the potential future healthcare costs in retirement. And you're right. I think the vast majority of people that I talk to do underestimate that number until we coach them up a little bit. So, Peg, we've talked about, you know, some regrets. We've talked about some positives. What would we tell people listening right now that aren't there yet, that aren't octogenarians, that haven't retired yet, that are still in their 40s, 50s, and or maybe 60s and still working? What advice would you give, or what key things would you share for those people listening that haven't gotten there yet?
Well, this seems simple, but live well below your means. You know, so I think in today's world, there's so many shiny objects, things that we want to do, and we want to keep up with the Joneses next door. And this is what my older clients say. You have to just kind of put the blinders on and say, this is who we are. And because there's a lot of stats that the Joneses next door have no money when they retire. So live well before below your means, and just start saving. I can't, this power of compounding, I know I rant about this all the time, but what a wonderful thing to understand if you're younger, even 40, 50 years old, the power of your money working for you versus you having to work your whole life, you know, to make ends meet. Stay invested. So we know this year's rocky, but try to stay calm when the world is just losing their mind. You have to really put the blinders on and just say, I'm in it for the long term. Yes, it would be great if you could jump out, if you could possibly know when to get back in, but nobody knows when to get back in. And then don't confuse income with wealth. Many people make a lot of money today, and they're just feeling like they can afford to just spend. But it is true. There's a statistic out there that if you're a high earner, the likelihood is you're not even saving. You're trying to, you know, be somebody that you feel like you're going to have that kind of income for the rest of your life. That's absolutely a negative thought, meaning you have got to take some of that great savings today from your wealth and have the power of compounding. Bruce?
Yeah, in addition to those are all good. So what I heard you say is live within your means, and I kind of said the same thing that clients tell me or people tell me, you know, don't spend more than you make. Stay invested, and that's a good one. Again, so often people want to make a decision when they're afraid. You know, Peg, think back to 2008 and how many people got out of the market because they were afraid. And a lot of these people are people that would have looked you in the eye and said, I understand buy low and sell high. You don't need to teach me that. But yet they got out when the market was low because they were afraid. Or unfortunately, a lot of people got out in 2008 because all they had was stocks and they still needed, you know, groceries and gas, and so they needed to create income, so they had to sell stocks. But our clients in 08, you know, we had other places where they could go get income, so they didn't have to sell stocks. So stay invested, but again, don't take more risk than you need to hit your goals. And I love what you said also about don't confuse income with wealth. Because, yeah, I know a lot of people that make a lot of money, but they don't accumulate anything. But yet I know people that have modest income that are saving and investing and disciplined, and they are accumulating money for the future, and they're on a good path to be able to retire when they want to. So let's do this, Susie and Peg. I know we're coming up against the end of the first half. Let's take our break. When we come back, Peg and I will have any finishing thoughts on the subject, but then, Susie, we'll get listeners involved in the second half.
All right. If you are listening and you have a question, please call or text right now, 651-461-9226. Maybe you're an octogenarian and want to comment, 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Back after this quick break. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones along with Bruce Helmer and Peg Webb. And we want to remind people listening, we're talking about what octogenarians want you to know about retirement and your retirement. So if you're sitting there listening today with your cup of coffee on this Memorial Day weekend and you have a question, this is your opportunity to talk to Bruce and Peg at 651-461-9226. Again, that's 651-461-9226. Maybe you're getting ready to retire and you're a little nervous. This would be a good chance to get some great information from our two very, very smart guests. Welcome back to both of you, too.
Thank you, Susie Jones. Well, Peg is certainly smart. I agree with that for sure. Hey, listeners, thank you for sticking with us also. And if you joined us late, as Susie mentioned, we've been talking about octogenarians, but also we can expand that a little bit and just say anybody that's been retired for quite a while, you know, what have you learned at retirement? What regrets do you have? What success stories do you have? Some of the things we talked about in terms of regrets in the first half was waiting too long to start saving and investing. Peg and I talk about that on the show all the time. Start doing something consistently, even if it doesn't seem like a lot. You do a little bit over a long period of time. It becomes a lot of money. It's never too soon to start. We talked about regrets of not protecting the downside. Things happened in their life, and they didn't have a plan B. We talked about working too long because they had to, again, because they didn't start soon enough. We talked about that a lot of people underestimate the cost of health care at retirement. And then in terms of positives, we talked about living within your means. Don't spend more than you make. We talked about staying invested. We talked about diversification. We talked about not confusing high income with high wealth. And Peg, any other things that you want to hit on before we get listeners involved? And by the way, Your question or comment does not have to just be on this topic. Any financial question is fair game. It doesn't have to be on octogenarians. Peg, other thoughts before we get listeners involved? Sorry.
Yeah, I thought maybe it would be a good idea just to talk about if you're like in your mid-career, let's say you're, you know, 40, 50 years old, what can you do now? So we got this advice from these 80-year-olds, but what would you do now that you say, maybe I should have some kind of a checkup or maybe like a little audit yourself if you're retirement ready? Meaning, you know, what did these 80-year-olds give us as kind of an idea of what to do? And here's a couple things. One of them is hiding money from yourself. Like somehow there's got to be money that's coming out of your paycheck, money that maybe you're swinging from your bank account to an investment. You don't even know it's there. I actually did that. I when I had a mortgage on my house a while ago, decades ago, I would put a little extra money in this bank account so that I could pay it off early. And I did the math and how much I'd have to save. I ended up selling that house earlier than I thought, but yet I still had this pot of money that I just kind of dollar cost averaged into this stock market, and I was able to use that money then to upgrade to a different house. This hiding money from yourself is easy to do, like with a 401k, 403b, something like that. I can't help but say, again, financial literacy. If you don't want to understand it, research it, then go find somebody that'll help you. I feel that there's so many valuable people out there, companies that can help you understand why investing is a good thing. And then do kind of a financial forecast. I know some people don't believe in them, meaning how can you possibly project decades of time? Well, if you don't have any kind of a roadmap, you probably are doing nothing, which means you're not, thinking about your future to the degree you can. And then we talked about this, Bruce, this cost for healthcare and just, you know, in the future, what it's going to cost. You actually probably have to save a little bit more, knowing that that's going to be a cost for the rest of your life. So just this would be just awareness of, if you are younger today, maybe it's time to do kind of a quick audit. And if there's something that you could do now, I think you would thank yourself, you know, decades from now. Bruce?
Yeah, Peg, just to take the baton from you on a couple of those things, I love all of them. But, you know, again, I get people that I get that they want to live for today. So one of the reasons they give for not saving and investing more is, you know, none of us is promised tomorrow. What if something happens? I want to live now. I want to be able to do these things while I can. And then you get other people that don't do anything. They squirrel away all their money. They save and invest for the future, and they don't have any fun along the way. Excuse me. I don't think it's an either-or decision. I think you can do both. I think you can plan for your future, set up a savings investment plan, and it doesn't have to take every extra dollar that you earn. You can still have money also to live for today. I don't think it's an either-or. I think you can do both, and it's our job to help people figure that out. And I think this is true regardless of income, whether you're really highly compensated or not. I think there's ways to invest in your future and have fun along the way. And the other thing, Peg, I wanted to pick up on, you mentioned the roadmap or financial forecasting. And what I tell people all the time, because you're right, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow or next week or next year. So how can these forecasts be accurate? Well, I've been doing this a really long time, and I will tell you that the long-range forecasting is remarkably accurate. Now, on any given year, it might be off by a lot, because I always tell people that our forecast is linear, life is not. What do I mean by that? So, as an example, in the forecast, we might assume an aggregate return on investment on all your money, your cash, your checking, your retirement plans. We might assume 5 or 6% on that. And on any given year, that number might be 20 or 25 or 30, or it might be a negative number. You may not ever have a year that it's actually 6%. But if you look at the long-term average, if you project out 10, 15, 20 years down the road, over time, those assumptions will be very, very close. And then the long-term will be really close. So even though on any given year it's off by a lot, if you look long-term, and again, I've been doing this a long time, so I've seen it, we're remarkably close. So I think these forecasts or projections are very helpful, are very relevant, and people should do them at some point. Now, again, the accuracy is going to be better, you know, the closer you are to retirement, right? If you do a forecast at 35, it's not going to be as accurate as if you do one at 55, because we know a lot more in those 20 years of living than we would have known at 35. But I think it's still, you know, always a good idea to do that at some point before you make retirement decisions. Okay. Anything else, or should we get listeners involved, Peg? Anything else you want to hit on?
No, let's get listeners involved.
All right, 651-461-9226. Again, I'll say it slower. 651-461-9226. Can ask Bruce or Peg anything for the next Well, let's just say 15 more minutes. This texter writes, I'm 59 years old. I've been working all my life. 28 years in public education, 18 years building caretaker. My question is, how many work credits do I have to qualify for Social Security?
So, Peg, this is a question, again, on in terms of Social Security benefits. The key on your paycheck is going to be FICA. Are you contributing to FICA? And your benefit is going to be based on, Peg, I think, what is it, your is it the top 35 years of work history? I mean, talk a little bit about how Social Security works, and maybe even we can direct the texter to how they can find their own account at Social Security. Peg?
Oh, yes. Well, for Social Security retirement benefits, you have to have a minimum of 40 credits. And these credits are earned kind of as you're working and paying your Social Security taxes. The maximum that you can get per year, I think it's, let's see, it's three or I think it's four credits earned per year. So it's not like you can work 1 year and you get your 40 credits. And there's a method of finding out, you know, how many credits you have, and that is going to socialsecurity.gov, but let's see, it's ssa.gov, I believe. They've actually changed it recently, and I got to just make sure, I don't want to give bad information. Yeah, so ssa.gov, and I love their website. I was just on there recently, and when you get on the site, number one, you have to set up your own account, and they've got a very good security system within their website. But once you get in there, it will actually have your entire history of your earnings that they have posted on your account. I found this fabulous to be able to look at the whole history of what you made. When I was 16, I worked at the Dairy Queen, and I made $1 an hour. And you know what? They posted that on there, and it was kind of a happy reunion just to think about it. But they have a lot of good information on their site. The other thing I love is when you scroll down on that front page, they actually have a kind of a calculator for you. So if you're still working, you can kind of move this dial to see what your future Social Security benefits will be, or if you want to retire right now, what they'll be. It's pretty modern in that you can kind of play around with it and see, you know, how much of the Social Security you would leave on the table, if you will, if you left, you know, too early. So, Bruce, I find that a great site to go to for a lot of your research. And then you still may have questions, so reach out to Social Security or your financial advisor to get more information. Bruce?
Peg, that was so excellent. It really, really good answer. And again, the question kind of magnifies the point that we talk about a lot, and that is that Social Security is more complicated than people realize. Are you eligible? If so, how much do you get? What if you're married and they have their own work history? There's just a lot of variables, a lot of decisions to make. When do I start to take it? Why do I start at this age? You know, I always tell people, you know, the clients that we work with, helping them make that determination is standard operating procedure, and we will help enhance the chances that you maximize your benefit and that you get that decision right. But I also caution people, it's never an exact science, because even though we know a lot about you, there's some things we don't know, the biggest of which is we don't know when you're going to die. So we have to speculate, make an educated guess, look at statistics and averages. But based on that data, we can help make that determination. But it's a great question, and it doesn't surprise me that this person doesn't fully understand their benefit. I think there's a lot of listeners that would fall into that same camp. So, Peg, what was that website again? Because that's, I think, the key to the whole question.
Yeah, ssa.gov.
All right.
Awesome.
651-461-9226. Let's take a call, you guys. Richard is on the line, has a question for both of you. Go ahead, Richard. You're on the air with Bruce and Peg.
Oh, hello. I'm 93 years old, and I'm fortunate enough to work for a company that had a pension, and I converted my IRAs into Roth, so the Roth is a half of my total assets, and it's now down to 10% of the total, and it's all going to charities. And one of the things I did, I took annuity out when I was about 35, and it just grew and grew and grew until I start withdrawing, and that's helped me a lot. So I'm at the point now, I don't have to sell any stocks to get by.
Hey, Richard, that's awesome. Yeah, I got to tell you, your voice, you don't sound 93. You sound youthful. You sound like you're in good health. And congratulations on your success. And thanks for listening and calling in and sharing that. So, Peg, a couple quick thoughts. Number one, Richard mentioned his pension. So that's something, the old pensions are what the technical term is, a defined benefit plan. Those are becoming more and more scarce. What we usually see way more often now is a defined contribution plan, things like 401ks, 403bs, and whatnot. But if you're one of the fortunate that, like Richard, that still has a pension, you've got that guaranteed income no matter what, kind of like another, you know, Social Security benefit, sort of. And it really gives you a lot of freedom and flexibility on your other assets. Peg, you want to comment on Richard's call?
Yes, thank you, Richard. That's great. And in 93, I'm sure you have a good, at least a decade or more to help educate, you know, others, especially young people, about what you did. You know, I'm disappointed in that pensions had gone away. I was in my early 20s, early 30s when I also had a pension where I worked. And, you know, at the time they offered, hey, we got this new thing, you know, you can go into a 401 and kind of control this pension on your own. Well, for me, that was okay because I was actually in the business already of financial planning. But I would say for the rest of the world, that was a very difficult transition because it forced you to either have to learn, you know, about money and the choices that they gave you. And I found that people weren't, you know, weren't taking advantage of understanding those plans and not contributing maybe to the degree that the corporation did for them. Now, here I am. I've been touting people to become financially literate themselves. But when you look at the people, all of us as a whole, as workers, they, that isn't their first love. So then they're not creating this pot of money that they need, like Richard has. He's got this paycheck that's come in. He's 93 years old. I'm sure he's getting paid for a very long period of time. So that's my rant about that. Then also the fact that you took advantage of Roth IRAs and was able to take some taxable IRA money and convert that to your Roth IRA that's tax advantage. I can't tell you often enough of how important your diversity of taxes is. And I know we rant on the show a lot about taxable, tax deferred, and tax advantaged. Well, if you only have tax deferred, just like the client that Bruce talked about or the potential client at 77, she had everything deferred. Well, you're actually kind of landlocked, right? You have no way of not paying Uncle Sam on every dollar that you take out. So if I can tell everybody and compliment Richard, it is to understand tax diversification as much as you do portfolio diversification. Bruce?
Oh, Susie, let's go to another question.
All right, very good. We have Al on the line from Plymouth. Al, thanks for calling in. You're on with Bruce and Peg. Turn your radio down, please.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to say I enjoy your show, and I've been a client of Wealth Enhancement for 19 years with the Michelle Newhouse Group. Wonderful, wonderful people. And I'd just like to comment on the long-term care. And I think my wife and I recently lost my wife, and I'm 86 years old, And my wife and I think we bought long-term care through the encouragement from PEG. And one thing about long-term care in Minnesota, it's very expensive, of course, but when we buy long-term care, we're helping the state of Minnesota out. And the state of Minnesota allows me $100 credit on my income tax. I would encourage Wealth Enhancement to lobby the state for more benefits for the people that buy long-term care so that the state doesn't have to pay for the long-term care. I just love your show, and I appreciate everything Wealth Enhancement has done for me. Thank you.
Oh, that's nice. We have about 2 minutes left, guys.
Yeah, thank you, Al. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a client. Thanks for sharing that. And so sorry for your loss of your wife. Hang in there, and best of luck to you. Peg, you want to comment on any of the things Al said?
Well, I'm a huge proponent of long-term care insurance. I bought it myself. I do believe I could self-insure. I think I could pay for it. But yet, I am all about trying to leave a legacy to my children and the grandchild. And if the state of Minnesota gives this $100 credit, I know it's not a lot. But they also offer some other things as far as, you know, keeping your monies for legacy, and there's some general rules around that too. So I might have a hard time getting Minnesota to change that, but we certainly could try, Bruce.
Yeah, we're almost out of time. Maybe we can even elaborate a little bit on this next week, but Al brought up a good point. Where I thought he was going to go, I thought he was going to turn it into kind of a beef, because a lot of people talk about the increase in their premium on their long-term care, which is a reality. But again, why that happened and what you can do about it, we probably don't have time. Maybe we want to make a mental note, Peg, and touch on that next week, because I think Susie's going to give us the hook here any second.
But I do think long-term care is so very important. I mean, and I know I'm not the expert, but I have elderly people in my lives, and both of them had it, and it was a godsend. Peg?
Thank you, Susie.
Have a good weekend, you guys. Good to talk to you, as always. Again, you are listening to Your Money, Bruce Helmer, Peg Webb, and if you did not get your question answered, please feel free to call 1-888-6-ADVICE. 1-888-6-ADVICE or yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com. Make it a great day.